The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hello, friends, and welcome once again to the program Afternoons with Mike. What a privilege it is for me to be here with you day in and day out at this time. Today is a very special day in the life of every American. Today is Election Day. And if you're listening right now in the afternoon, as opposed to our replay in the evening, well, there's still time for you to get out there and vote. If you haven't already done so, please do. Vote for the candidate of your choice. There are lots of helps. We have lots of things to look at, both at iVoter.com, also at the Florida Family Policy Council website. You can get all sorts of resources, find out information on things like judges, also other candidates. That's at the Florida Family Policy Council.com. And avail yourself of those wonderful resources that are there. So today on our program, it's a little bit different than normal. I've got a bunch of guests lined up. I have three guests plus a commentary, a closing commentary from Al Mohler from his podcast that is called The Briefing. First off, however, today we're going to begin with Matt Staver, president of the Liberty Council. And that is in Orlando. Matt is a regular on the program. He represents people who have had their civil liberties infringed upon, taken away in some instances, and he has a great perspective. So let's go to that time with Matt Staver. I'm so happy to have Matt Staver on the phone with me right now. Matt is from the Liberty Council here in Orlando. And Matt, these are times, I know that we've talked many times about this, these are unprecedented times, and your office has been busy protecting people all across the country. What are your thoughts on this eve? This is actually Election Day. What are your thoughts on this day?
Well, we have said in the past that this is one of the most important elections, but each one seems to become even more important, and this one is, no question, the most important. If you go to Washington, D.C., the law enforcement's on high alert. Just last week, 14 police officers were injured because of the riots. One cannot see the sunrise or the sunsets anymore because he lost his eyesight as a result of someone pointing a laser in his eyes. If you go to the Soho District in New York City, the businesses are boarding up. Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills, they're doing the same thing. There's groups called Shutdown DC and whatever other city name. They're former climate change organizations that are promoting direct violence and riots against specific organizations, people, businesses, all over the country. So this is unprecedented. It's no longer just media censorship. We're talking about putting people's lives in danger. We're talking about, this is what happens throughout history when tyrannical regimes take over power. This is what happens in what was envisioned clearly even today by the Communist Party USA, to take over by violent overthrow, to declare martial law. It's all on their website. And then to punish those people who were the resistors, people that are individuals who are not going to be the anarchists, the socialists, the Marxists, that want to live in an America where we have freedom, the land of the free. So this is really unprecedented from anything we've ever seen. If we look after the day of the election on Wednesday, one of the most religious free exercise cases in our history is at the Supreme Court. And amazingly, we have a change in justices. We know which way Ginsburg would have sided. She would have come down on the LGBT side against the free exercise religion and forced Christian and Catholic adoption agencies to violate their beliefs or shut down if they don't place whole children in homes with same-sex households and transgender individuals and whatever else you have. Now we have Justice Barrett on the Supreme Court. Elections matter. We litigate before judges all over the country. Elections matter. We see it with regards to the kind of judges or justices that are now on the bench because of the 2016 election. So I encourage people to pray for this country, pray for protection for our law enforcement, pray for America, and pray against this darkness that is so repressive, evil, the shedding of innocent blood is at stake. And, you know, cry out to God to preserve us and protect our nation.
You know, we are recording this again on the Monday, the eve of Election Day, but to be played back on Tuesday. And so I want to make very clear. And with that fact, that at least in the early playing of this program, in the 2 o'clock edition, there are still time for people to vote. Matt, this has been, without a doubt, a year like no other in another area, and that is the amount of Christians who are still to this day feeling a divided sense. There have been some national leaders. John Piper came out with an article that basically was critical of both and gave reasons why one shouldn't vote for either one if you're a believer. And there are other leaders who are refuting that. So we're talking about a division, even in Christians among our community. What advice do you have for people as they are yet to go to the poll, or maybe they're even standing in line right now listening on an app or on their radio? What advice do you have for them?
Well, you know, 2020 has really shown the real leaders and those that are not, the hirelings versus those that Jesus talks about in John chapter 10 as the real good shepherds that will lay down their life for the sheep. I think you've really seen that not only among Christians, but certainly among some leaders. As it relates to John Piper, not a surprise for me. You know, he's already rejected the historical parts of Genesis in terms of creation. So when you start picking and choosing which parts, even though they're narrative, they're not poetic, they're not apocalyptic, they're absolutely narrative with regards to the creation, and you start saying, no, that really didn't happen that way, you begin to compromise, and that's what ultimately happens. You compromise on other things, so it's not really surprising. And on the issue of civic involvement, he's always been wrong. So, you know, the fact of the matter is this. This election is very clear. This is not a personality contest. That's the problem that some people get into. It's a personality contest. I don't like this, what he said, what he did, what he tweeted. This is a policy contest. Look, let's go back and look at some of our great leaders that we now look at as great leaders. Moses, considered a great leader. And he killed a man with his bare hands, with his bare hands. And he had an anger problem, so much so that God didn't allow him to go into the promised land. Yet he led people out of Egypt. God called him for a specific reason, flawed though he was. David could have had any woman in his universe, and yet he chose a person who was out on the front lines fighting for his freedom. And he went and had relations with her. And to cover it up, he put the same man out on the front lines and withdrew the troops so that he would be killed. And yes, he repented, but he had so much blood on his hands, God said, you're not going to build my temple. So he calls up Solomon, not a real nice guy. You know, he had 700 women, wives, and 300 concubines, 1,000 women. Mm-hmm. And through those women, he brought idolatry in. Yet he's the one God chose to build the temple. Now, he didn't raise his kids very well because he had his children. And what happened? They ended up having division in the northern and southern kingdom divided. Now we look at Samson. We see him in the Hall of Fame, in Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11. But I wouldn't let my daughter go out with Samson. You know, this guy had a sexual lust problem from the very early time. Mm-hmm. And he ultimately was hanging around a prostitute, and that's how he lost his eyesight. He could have done so much more that God wanted him to do. He wanted him to be the 12th judge that's in the judges, the last judge listed there of the tribe of Dan. Dan was supposed to drive out the Philistines, but they wanted an easier life, and through Samson and his indiscretions, they ultimately fell into idolatry, and that's why the northern kingdom fell long before the southern kingdom, because of the idolatry and the bad kings, although he ends up in the Hall of Faith. You know, I wouldn't have chosen Matthew, a tax collector. Those were pretty low-level people. Yet Jesus chose him, and now I'm named after the Gospel of Matthew. And I love that gospel that Jesus transformed this tax collector into an apostle. You know, Jesus uses people for specific reasons. None of us are without flaw. Look at the policies. On the policy, we have a president that is the most pro-life president in world history, as it relates to America, I should say. Look at Israel, the most pro-Israel president in history. I'm talking about going all the way back to George Washington. Look at so many other areas, religious freedom, the most pro-religious freedom president in history. And I'm talking about policies, and I can name them, but we don't have time. Yet look at Biden. Biden wants to allow 8-year-olds to determine whether they can have sex change surgeries. He said that they're not going to allow religious freedom to be used as hate. In other words, this big case that's coming up pitting the First Amendment against Christian adoption centers and foster care ministries, he would side with the LGBT agenda. Forget the First Amendment. Kamala Harris, she's the one who began the politically motivated investigation into Sandra Merritt, which has become the most expensive case in our history at Liberty Counsel. We're defending this woman who exposed Planned Parenthood for what they were doing, procuring baby body parts, some of them being extracted while the babies were alive, whisking these body parts off to various procurement places, some of which were sold for $17,000 apiece. She should be a hero for revealing that, and yet Kamala Harris, started this criminal investigation against her. This is an easy decision when you look at policies, not personality.
Mm-hmm. And that is something that everybody's got to take into consideration and deal with. From what I believe you've given us, the better perspective than what it might otherwise seem. And this is such a heightened thing. And, you know, it's felt deeply. There's a lot of passion going out on this issue. And, you know, along with that, we have the ongoing problem of churches and restrictions brought about because of the COVID thing. But before we talk about that, and I know we're running out of time with you here, but I do want your thought on two things, if you could. Number one, COVID's impact on some states that are voting and will have the ability to have their votes withheld. The mail-in votes will not have to be sent in up to 12 days after the election. That, and then the COVID restrictions going on in such states as California. Give us your thoughts on those.
Well, COVID is just an excuse to control people. Obviously, it's a real disease, but we've had worse diseases in our history. We'll have worse diseases than COVID. It's an attempt, and they've used COVID to do a global reset for climate change and global control and so many other things. And if you look at the worst restrictions, whether it's churches or anything else around the country, they all have one thing in common. They're headed by a Democratic governor who is radically pro-abortion, who supports publicly the riots in their various cities and state. So it's very clear. It's an ideological issue. You look at the ones with the freest, they're pro-life governors. Like Florida, we have a pro-life governor. We've had freedom for months in Florida, and yet you don't see that in other places. Mm-hmm. Regarding the absentee or the mail-in ballots, that's unconstitutional for what some of these states are doing. And frankly, I think if the election is not overwhelming and it comes down to these late-arriving mail-in ballots, that'll ultimately go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will find that that's unconstitutional as to what some of these states have done. There is an election day. It's set. You can't move that just because you want to as a governor and do that unilaterally. And many of these have not been legislative. These have been governors just unilaterally saying that they're going to extend the time for voting. There is a Constitution of the United States. This is a national election. It's not a state election. It's a national one. States participate in it. Individuals participate in it. And we have one election day, and we can't move that. So I think, God forbid that it's a close election like that, and we have to go into litigation, but I think if we do, I think these late-arriving, movable dates will all be found unconstitutional.
If that's the case, how long do you think that would be before it's actually taken to the Supreme Court?
Well, let's go back to 2000. We were involved in about 5 to 6 weeks of nonstop, 7-day-a-week litigation from the November election, and it didn't finish until the first week or so of December. And so that's how long that took. It took 5 to 6 weeks straight of litigation, including a United States Supreme Court decision. I pray we don't have a situation like that, but we could find ourselves in a situation similar to that.
Wow. And then your thoughts on an update on all the things going on in California. I know that MacArthur's stand is well documented. You've been representing Cheyenne out there. What are the new bits of news coming out of California?
Well, as it relates to the churches, pretty much the same thing. Now, we have a case, Harvest Rock Church and Harvest International Ministry. Pastor Cheyenne is the pastor of Harvest Rock, and it's at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. We've now asked the full panel of all the judges to hear this case because it's so significant, and they're reviewing that as we speak, and we'll know in the near future whether they'll do that. If not, we'll have a hearing shortly after the first of the year. But California is ground zero for a lot of these restrictions. All of the restrictions and the repressive threats of criminal year in jail, daily $1,000 fines, they're all hanging over all these pastors' heads every single day, including parishioners at Harvest Rock Church, where we have the letter from the prosecutor office threatening criminal and daily charges of fines. But it's kind of indicative of what has been happening. Governor Newsom has this new Thanksgiving order, and believe it or not, he says you can't celebrate Thanksgiving for more than 2 hours, must be outside, has to be self-serve, all people must be 6 feet apart in all directions, can only use the bathroom inside briefly, but has to be sanitized in between, disposable plates and plasticware, cups and so forth. It's unbelievable. Imagine traveling to your family for several hours. You can only be there for 2 hours, but you can't go inside except to use the bathroom. The guest has to just sit outside while the host does all the work on preparation. And you can't have your own family there because you can only have that family that's the host and two other families, units that are there. So you can't see your brothers and sisters, your grandma, and some of the other relatives for Thanksgiving. The fact that he even thinks he has the authority to do it shows that these people have lost their mind.
It's an unbelievable time, and it will be very interesting to see just exactly what this week will hold. And I agree with you, praying that there would be an outcome on Election Day by tonight, as people are hearing this, that will not call for a redo of what happened in 2000 and the weeks that could follow. It's really going to be an interesting week, without a doubt. And then the outcome for people on both sides, there's going to be somebody, a whole bunch of somebodies, that aren't really happy after this election is over. But Matt Staver from the Liberty Council, I always value your thoughts, your input, and I want to say thank you so very much for being with us on this program, and God bless you and all the work you're doing there.
Thank you. Good to be with you. And pray for America, as I know your listeners are, and encourage people to vote and get out and vote biblical values.
I agree. Thank you, Matt Staver. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Dave Zanotti from the Public Square. He's back again. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Back again here on Afternoons with Mike, on the line again with me today. Boy, 2 days in a row, Dave Zanotti. I could get used to this. I like it. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. It's a privilege to be with you again.
Well, you know, Dave, since we talked on yesterday, obviously now we are in on the very day of elections. And I know there's been a lot of people who have anticipated this day. I was thinking myself on Sunday afternoon, when Cindy and I did our early voting, the people, and I think they're kind of unsung heroes, those poll watchers, those people who have braved not so much in Florida, but a lot of areas, bad weather, cold weather, and they brave this early voting year this year, in a pandemic year, more than we can even imagine how long this has gone. And we talked to a person that said the crowds that we saw had been going on for 14 days. So I think they're unsung heroes, those people that are putting up with record voting, record turnout, and it is it's a big job that they're doing today.
Mike, thanks for noticing that. because people who go to serve in their local communities at their local precincts on Election Day do a wonderful work. Now, Election Day isn't November 3rd anymore. It starts October 1, and today's the last day of voting. So today's our last in-person day where all the precincts are open. And those require people to sometimes volunteer or take a minimum wage sort of approach for the day. But they're doing it to serve their local community, their state, and the nation. And that's right. Those people, no one wants to get pulled for jury duty on a regular basis. Okay, we all know that's, you know, that's a disruptive reality.
Right.
These people plan to give this day every 2 years, sometimes every year, as a service to their community. So they should certainly be thanked. And that means when we go in there, no matter what we're doing, the last thing you want to do is launch off on a poll worker, because, my goodness, they're the heroes to start with. They're doing for us what we are unable or unwilling to do. So that's something we have to really appreciate.
I really do, and I agree with you completely. And these people that we experienced on Sunday afternoon, now we went to the Apopka early voting location in the VFW, the community center up there, and that's where we stood in line for 1 hour, Dave, from the time we got in line to the time we went through the doors to the polls to actually get our ballot was 1 hour. Took us 15 minutes to complete everything once we're inside the building and then we're out. And those people that were in that room, every person we talked to, were just the kindest, most friendly, and very courteous people that we could imagine. So again, many props going out to the Apopka location. I'm sure that's happening all across Central Florida. But this is the day, and the polls close tonight. I think it's 7 o'clock here in Florida. Some are saying, Dave, here's my first question for you. Some are saying that historically, long lines like what we're seeing, and of course, these lines, as we said, are really unprecedented, that those lines are good for the Republicans. Do you agree with that from history?
Well, from history, long lines in a situation where we're not in an open seat election, where we're dealing with an incumbent, long lines could either mean a referendum on the incumbent, which is positive, or it could in fact mean a wave election coming from the other side. It's very difficult, Mike, to determine that. Mm. Example, 1976, Gerald Ford lost his race to Jimmy Carter. We forget about that race and think it was a throwaway because of Ford pardoning Nixon. And so the response of the electorate was to throw Ford out. And we think, well, that was just a big wave. Oh, that was a fractional, tiny, tiny margin of less than a vote per precinct in three states. And Gerald Ford would have been elected the president of the United States. So it's very difficult to determine. In 1980, you had an open seat, you had Jimmy Carter running for reelection, and Ronald Reagan, the race was the day before the election, was too close to be called, according to the media, back in 1980. But by 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, Jimmy Carter had basically given up. He had conceded the race. So it's very difficult to determine what those lines mean. It's very difficult.
Hmm. Well, that's an interesting perspective. And that year was an amazing year. I do remember that. That was the first election that Cindy and I voted in as a married couple. And that election was really a shocking one to many people. And I think for a lot of those our age, the whole issue of Carter's faith, his declared faith in Jesus, caused a lot of people to go toward that vote just for those reasons only. And then the outcome of obviously his becoming president quickly went to record interest rates, the Iran hostage crisis, and that was a tough 4 years. And then he was one and done. And a lot of people are wondering if that fate could also be for President Trump, a one and done candidate. So it's going to be the comparisons are going to be quite interesting to see what happens with that. What do you think, Dave, is at stake for believers in this particular election?
I think, Mike, that for all citizens, and that's one of the things that we focus on very hard with iVoters.com, which is still available. I want to commend you. If it only took you 15 minutes to vote with six ballot issues you were facing, you clearly had your homework done in advance, and I want to congratulate you for that. And that's why we do sites for free like iVoters.com, and we market that site to everyone. Because the reality is our rights as citizens don't split based on where we go to church or if we go to church. Our rights are given to us by God.
Right.
And it is our responsibility to tend to our government in such a way that we respect and honor and love our neighbor by protecting their rights, their conscience, their property, et cetera, and their futures. So we have a responsibility. What's at stake in any given election is always high. But one thing that we tend to forget, what's at stake as much as who wins and who loses, is who shows up and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
See, America is a cutting-edge technology in the story of human history. It is a place that is predicated upon a theistic proposition of truth. There is a God, and he is not silent, and he's given us a job to do. And it is our job to work to protect his creation and to protect other people's rights. Now, this hangs on the edge of self-government, which requires perseverance, duty, and paying the price to go out and do something about it. When we do not vote, we send a message to forces on this planet that despise the notion of self-government and individual ruling themselves, of home rule, if you will, first of my own soul and spirit, then of my household, then of my community, then of the state and the nation, where we all work together based on the consent of the governed and take care of God's creation. But those who believe in the administrative state, those who believe in totalitarianism, those who believe in top-down government, when we don't vote, we send them the message that basically says, come and get us because we don't care anymore. That tension is always with us in America,
mm-hmm.
between those who would like to take power and those who accept the responsibility of duty to shepherd power. If we don't do our job, somebody else will. And that's never turned out very well. So in essence, what's at stake is our very core existence as a nation. It always is. And it's always put in jeopardy if we don't vote.
Oh, these are big, big, weighty issues that are before us. And voting, there are a couple of quotes that I had researched and found out. It was Abraham Lincoln that said, the ballot is more powerful than the bullet. And I love what Thomas Jefferson said. He talked about how that this, it is a people, it's representing people who are responsible to vote. So taking the responsibility, it's not just government for the people, he said, it's government for those who participate, for the people who participate. And that is a call upon, like you said, every person, every citizen, whether or not we're believers. And this is a call for, sadly, for a lot of Christians have set out in the past. And it's shocking to see how many times we see statistics that those that were believers did not take part, did not participate in the voting process. That's a shock, isn't it?
Well, I don't mean to sound contrary today, but actually it's not a shock at all, Mike. And I know you know where I'm going with this, because we don't even pray for our nation as a regular practice every Sunday morning at mm-hmm. worship, when the scriptures command us to pray for those in authority over us. We don't even do that basic civic duty. And so I'm not at all surprised to hear large numbers of people who don't vote. And I don't try to guilt people into going out and voting either. I'm just the reality is that there is virtually no difference between the Christian community and the broader community in regards to our duties of citizenship. We have accommodated to the culture. Many Christians won't vote because they want to protect their sense of being liked in the culture. And mm-hmm. so they don't want to participate in the process. Pastors won't speak out even on the most important core issues that are so obvious, because they're afraid that it will get involved, and to quote Francis Schaeffer, that will interfere with their religious projects. That's how Schaefer talked about it in 1984 before he passed away. So, no, I'm not surprised at all. What I am encouraged by is how many people of faith have abandoned the notion that they're supposed to wait on political parties to provide them leadership, and they're acting as independents, as free agents. When we started this work in the state of Florida, you pretty much had a state that was 60-40 Republican-Democrat, and very few independents. Where today, in Florida, which is one of the most difficult states to be non-aligned or an independent, you have almost 30% of the electorate that regularly participates that is not connected to either political party. In Ohio, for example, it's 66% of the voters are non-aligned. Great numbers of people who are conservative in their thinking are saying, look, I'm not going to wait on political parties to lead. I'm going to lead. I'm going to take responsibility. So that's the part that encourages me, is how many people are stepping outside of the traditional methodology and doing this as a matter of passion and purpose. So, and I think we'll see a lot of those folks vote, and I think that's one of the reasons the lines are so long. And that's why we can't predict, because in Florida, there's more independent, non-aligned voters now than there ever have been before.
Do you think that there would be in Florida a large number of people who maybe even went into this last week undecided, if they're not aligned to a political party? Do you think that those people are possibly waiting till the last minute to decide, or do you think that they have had their mind made up for some time?
I think there are fewer undecideds this year than ever before. But because because it's easier to make money in the media, not including your network, which is that group of, I'm a big fan of the Shepherd and all the wonderful people associated with what you all do, and Mark and communications and all of that group. I love them all. You're all excluded. You're not in this business like the rest, so many. But many of the media outlets make so much money in an election season that they love to play shirts and skins, red and blue, pit campaigns against each other to drive up campaign spending. You guys aren't doing that. You're out telling the truth just as it is, and I respect and appreciate that immensely. So, no, I don't think there are millions upon millions of undecided voters. I think they're simply non-aligned, and they're often ignored because it's difficult to fit them in a business model to advertise off of them. And then social media has come in and sucked up most of that money anyhow.
Well, there's one final question I have for you today, Dave, and that is this. I heard a commentator talk about looking backwards at previous times, and when we'd have candidates, even in a presidential election where you'd have a Republican and a Democrat candidate standing on a debate stage, and they'd be able to somewhat yuck it up, and really, even though they saw things differently, at least they would have this sense of common courtesy. I would wonder, as we talk about in COVID, the new normal, do you think that there's a chance in America's new normal, whatever it's going to look like after this election, that we could have that kind of civility among top candidates again? Do you see that as a possibility?
Well, I think that only happens when pastors begin to accept the responsibility to pray for those in authority over us and teach that, and that we disciple that in our homes and around our dinner tables. That's one thing. And secondly, when people of faith who accept the call to be salt and light enter into the marketplace and run for public office and model civility. I think it is more than foolish for us to accuse other people who do not share a vibrant evangelical faith, who are not reading the scripture every day, praying for the power of the Holy Spirit every day, to expect them to act like award-winning Christian citizens while we sit in the cheap seats and criticize and don't run for public office. I think we need to model leadership by service again, which is how our country got started. When you got started in this country, your goal was to be a minister or to serve in the law or to serve in business, because you wanted to build a country, not sit back on your 401k and your investment portfolio or waiting on the government to take care of you. You've got to go serve, and we need to restore the concept of service as a form of witness.
Speak real quick to this question. How can dads prepare their sons and daughters for that very thing?
One, vote. Two, watch your mouth. Okay. Learn the power of words. 3, love your wife like there's no tomorrow. And then 4, seek God's signs for what the gifting is that he put in your kids, and then lay your life down to empower them to go out and make a difference the way God prepared them. And understand that leadership is a gift, that if your kids got it, sell everything you have and invest in that gift.
Oh, it's great stuff, Dave. Always good stuff. Thank you for talking to us today. And God have mercy on our great country.
Amen. May God have mercy on America today and every day. Thank you, Mike.
All right. God bless you, Dave. Coming up in just a moment, it's a chat with John Stemberger from the Florida Family Policy Council. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. Back again on the line now with John Stemberger from the Florida Family Policy Council. John Stemberger, what a busy day I am sure this is for you. Tell me a little bit about what your world is like today.
Well, it's just a lot of anticipation. My family, my wife and my two oldest sons are working at the polls, so we're getting directly involved with the whole family. But a lot of our work has been done. We have put out voter guides. We are doing quite a bit of media, giving perspective, and just encouraging people that have not voted to continue to vote till the line. As long as you're in line by 7 o'clock p.m. In the time of your election, then you have the right to vote. Mm-hmm. So we're encouraging all those people who are kind of busy just doing their life, working and taking care of kids and all that, to make sure that they get out to vote.
You know, I just was on the line a moment ago with Dave Zanotti, who we were talking about poll watchers and volunteers like what your family is doing and how much of an invaluable part to this day that is. So thank you on behalf of all of us, brother, for your family's example in doing that. And I know that in some ways that's a very thankless job, a very fatiguing job. And this year they're probably busier than any election in recent memory.
Well, the beauty of having a system where you have everything broken down into hundreds and thousands of supervisor elections in each county across the country is that fraud can't be committed that difficult. If you have one central agency that's counting all the votes, big chance for fraud. But by having it decentralized, by having independent constitutional officers, supervisor elections, you know, there may be discrepancies, there may be somebody doing funny business, but it can't be anything that is on a wide scale effort. And so that's the beauty of these positions. And they actually literally hold, they hold the seeds of our republic and our representative democracy in these, these elected officials who then hire people to count the votes and do all that they do. It's really an integral part of our democracy. And so it's a great, great work that they do.
You know, I just heard today on the news that this group that had filed and made an appeal for all of those, 150,000 votes in Texas to be thrown out. The state Supreme Court voted against that, but they did then also, the election company there, the election group, removed all of those other spots that had been put up. According to what I heard today, that was against Texas election law for those things to happen. So that's a good bit of good news. And there was also some encouraging things that those 150,000 votes might be sequestered and kind of, vetted to see if they are indeed accurate. And do you feel that those things are those concerning issues, or do you feel that the system to avoid fraud is a pretty good one nationwide, John?
Yeah, it's a great question. The White House has issued a 381-page report of documented instances of election tampering and fraud and different problems that have had literally legal cases and formal complaints. And actually, Consumer Reports, believe it or not, just got into the game of being liberal advocates. We issued a robocall. I personally did a robocall to about 500,000 voters, telling them to vote early or vote in person, because mail-in ballots oftentimes are discarded because of discrepancies or just because of situations where they're tampered with. And they took issue with me. Consumer Reports did as an official matter. And I said, since when did you guys stop just doing product reviews and started engaging in political speech analysis? But they issued a whole article saying that I was making a false claim, when in fact it's not. There have been many, many instances of ballots being tampered with by mail. Election supervisors and people that work in election supervisors, they know which neighborhoods are Republican versus Democrat. So when a mail-in ballot comes in that neighborhood, they can kind of figure out, you know, if they want to tamper with it, why they would tamper with some and not others. So this, you know, this stuff does happen, but we have to still, it's the best system in the world. It's the least amount of fraud in the world. And so I think that, you know, we continue to do what we do and be faithful and trust our elected officials to do the best that they can do to tally the votes.
You know, this whole COVID situation has been the impetus for what Matt Staver called a weaponizing of just kind of like taking over some of the laws and kind of subverting in some instances, in a lot of people's opinions, the whole tried and true electoral process here in America. And this, do you think that this issue in Pennsylvania, John, could, in your mind, could this become a real problem tonight as Pennsylvania's votes are started to be counted? What are your thoughts on that?
You talking about the rioting in Philadelphia?
Yeah, the whole, well, no, not the rioting, but just the delay and also the Pennsylvania Attorney General saying that the outcome is already known.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people. I remember Phyllis Schlafly. She was very against early voting. She said voting is supposed to be a day and an event. It is not a month-long, weeks-long kind of thing. You know, you can make the case either way. I do know that in terms of just turnout, mail-in ballots have been significantly favoring, in other words, absentee ballots have been significantly favoring Democrats. People that vote in person have been significantly favoring Republicans. That's just a statistical fact. But it is disturbing that what used to be a day-long election has now become weeks and months. And now with the after effect of counting ballots after the effect, that's going to even make it more uncertainty. I think it destabilizes our democracy. It destabilizes our constitutional republic to have that. So I hope those laws are challenged constitutionally, because I think that they're bad policies. And we need to know on election night who won, right? Barring some Bush versus Gore abnormality, which we're praying does not happen.
Exactly. Again, quoting Matt would believe that there could be even some Supreme Court attention given to these extension deadlines, like in North Carolina, where it's 12 days they have to count the ballots after tonight. And, you know, from his standpoint, that's not even constitutional to do that.
I think that's right. And there's a very good chance that there could be litigation here. Hopefully the vote will be so decisive, and the electoral college votes in the states that don't have that will be so decisive that it won't matter. But it could be that a single state like Florida or like North Carolina or like Arizona, their results and their electoral college votes hang in the balance, and it could make the difference. And so this is another reason why Amy Coney Barrett being on the Supreme Court is very, very important. Her being there is not just good as a matter of having a good judge, but it also creates stability. If we have a 3-3 vote in a presidential election dispute, you have a constitutional crisis. There is no way to resolve that. That is the impetus for a civil war or a very serious situation where there's rioting and but who's actually going to be in power. So the fact that Amy Coney Barrett is there is, it gives us an odd number on the court, right? So that you can have a tie, and it deletes that possibility of having a constitutional crisis because of a tie vote at a Supreme Court level.
And Barrett is really known as being one that is true to the Constitution judge, and she's basically going to hold it down to the original line of what was intended, of what the framers wanted, what the heart of this whole Constitution is about. So, yes, that is indeed a comforting thought, that if it does go all the way to the top courts, at least we've got somebody there that's going to hold it to the Constitution.
Well, it's not just that. There's no way it could be a tie vote. I mean, sometimes you interpret the Constitution strictly, and you don't like the result you get, even as conservatives. But the point is that we can't have this crisis where there's a tie vote and we don't know who won because there's an odd number in the Supreme Court. So irrespective of who's there, there's a real wisdom to preserving the continuity of the republic for having an odd number in the Supreme Court.
Well, I tell you what, I'm grateful for that, and the timing couldn't have been better, and it may well prove out that the need for that kind of a tie-breaking vote in the Supreme Court would really become even more so if it comes down to that, and we see that it's going to go to that. We'll all be glad that that happened and that they got that thing pushed through prior to the election. John, you've worked so hard. You've been at this now for months. What's your next couple? Are you going to have any downtime at all? What's your next couple of weeks going to look like?
So we're just waiting to see. We hope for a clear and clean victory tonight. But it's very, very possible for the next days or next several weeks, we could be hustling with national coalition meetings and trying to figure out litigation strategy and, you know, depending upon where any dispute might be. So there's really no way to know what's going to happen over the next several days. We're just praying for a clean result and no rioting and social disorder as a result of that.
Are you seeing any signs, John, that would give you any confidence to make any kind of prediction about what's going to happen?
Well, yeah, I don't have predictions per se. I feel like that Trump has the advantage because since we've been observing a presidential contest since Kennedy, and we've been televising these things, and it becomes more of a video situation. To me, the most interesting candidate and the better communicating candidate has always won. If you look at the contest over the years in a general election for the president. Also, you see the pattern that the person that is more secular usually has a disadvantage. It's a little bit skewed here because neither of the candidates have a public perception as being, you know, tied to a faith for any kind of a significant way. People would argue with me on both sides, but it's not like, you know, having, a faith candidate, like let's say Bill Clinton was known as a Baptist or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Trump has the advantage. Also, there's the positive negative energy. Positive energy wins campaigns. Negative energy does not. If you think about Obama versus Romney, no one really loved Romney. They just didn't stand. You know, the Republicans didn't like Obama. So it was negative energy, and Obama won. Obama had all positive energy. In this case, we have negative energy against Trump and positive energy against Trump. Republicans love him. Democrats hate him. So I think that, you know, because positive energy wins elections, nobody's excited about Joe Biden, right? Nobody's like, the rallies are not huge and all of that. So I think that Trump has an advantage. Now, that's not an electoral college numeric calculation, but that just seems to be a pattern that repeats itself over and over again in presidential elections. So I think Trump has the advantage, but you never know because it really is about electoral college vote, not a nationwide popularity vote.
Mm. Well, that's very insightful, John. And I pray for you and your family that things will be known tonight so that you're not going to have to enter those days or weeks of additional work. My goodness, you have worked plenty hard enough on this already. And I want to say thank you, too, for taking the time to talk with us today on a very busy day. God bless you, man.
Thank you, Mike.
Coming up, it's one more segment today with Al Mohler from The Briefing. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Back again here in Afternoons with Mike, rounding out our program today. A closing thought from Al Mohler from The Briefing. You can always listen to this podcast by going to almohler.com. Here is Reverend Al Mohler.
As the polls are now opening and as Americans have their final opportunity to go to vote, and as we encourage one another as Christians in the United States to do just that, to fulfill the stewardship of our opportunity and responsibility as voting citizens, we need to recognize in wonder the fact that the United States and its constitutional order are the marvel of the world, our enduring experiment in democratic self-government. All of this lived out not only before our fellow citizens, but before the world, underscores the very, very rare achievement in the entire span of human history of electoral stability. Remember that the first general election in the United States was conducted in weeks that would include 1788 and 1789. That was the election that would eventually produce George Washington as the nation's first president. Think about that. An unbroken line of general elections in the United States from 1788 to 2020. There is nothing like it in the world. That means that Americans have gone to the polls. We have conducted general elections every 4 years, including 1812 during, well, you've guessed it, the War of 1812. In 1860 and in 1864, with the Civil War looming and the Civil War underway. In 1916, with World War I underway in Europe. In 1932, in the depths of the Great Depression. In 1942 and in 1944, with the entire world at war in what we now know as World War II. The story goes on and on. It's now up to this generation of Americans, and today I'm speaking particularly to American Christians who are citizens and have the right and responsibility to vote. As you go to the polls, understand that this marvel of the world demands our own faithfulness. And for Christians, it means that we learn to translate our own Christian worldview into the tangible evidence of a vote. A biblical worldview reminds us that we can sin by making politics ultimate, but we can also sin, and this might be more likely in the case of many Americans, by treating politics with Christian neglect. In a situation in which citizens are given the stewardship of the vote, not voting is itself a political act with political consequences.
And how extremely thankful I am that God is not up for a vote. He is the Lord, and He is sovereign over all. And we do echo Al's and all the other people that you've heard today on the program, their thoughts about the importance of casting your vote. If you're listening to this in the early release in the afternoon, please, there's still time for you to get out and vote. If you are listening in the evening, well, we thank you for voting if you did and encourage you to do so in the future. And I'm thankful that you joined me today on Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.